What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson. Let's get this started. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to episode 11 of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This week, we're doing it a little different, doing it over the phone. So, Tom, you hear me good?
Yeah, I hear you fine. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, everything's good. So, what's been going on with you this week?
I haven't really been doing a whole lot of weight training. I've been doing more yoga and just focusing on healing my shoulder. And I don't know, like I'm missing that itch. So I've been really thinking about either running an obstacle course or maybe doing some training for either a marathon or a half marathon. I think I might push back the obstacle course training to let my shoulder heal a little bit more. But I don't know, I've been feeling that competitive itch, so I want to do something.
Yeah, no, a marathon sounds cool.
Yeah, I'm not that. Unfortunately, I don't live in a good spot to go running. It's pretty much it's all flat, and there's no good trails right in my like immediate vicinity. That's the only thing that's kind of holding me back. It's like this training is going to be boring as hell.
Well, you did cross country in high school. So how far did you run then?
I was in better shape after that when I did wrestling. Cross country is just like a nice little. It gets you in decent shape, but. We'll talk about this in another episode. HIIT training is way better for your endurance than just like steady state. And steady state is what you do in cross country. You run 10 miles, maybe you have a couple hills in, but it's mostly just flat and gets kind of boring. Like HIIT training is all out effort all the time. And that's what wrestling is. So after wrestling, I was in far better shape.
Yeah, but what's the farthest you've ever run? That's what I'm asking.
In one time, 15 miles.
Okay.
But once you get to about five, you can do five pretty easy. Going from 5 to 10 and like 10 to 20 isn't that much of a difference. It's mostly just getting your lungs built up, strengthening your heart, and a lot of it has to do with your technique. You know, if you're messing up, you know, in your gait at like when you're going at 5 miles an hour. And you're only doing a mile, you might not feel anything. But if your gait's messed up and you're going for 20 miles, that's a lot more steps. You're going to start feeling that pain either in your shins, knees, hips, back, somewhere along those lines. So it's a lot of just getting your technique right. Unfortunately, people don't really have that good of running form. Not that many people run anymore. So that's the main thing I got to focus on is just increasing my technique.
And how long is a marathon, like a full marathon?
26 miles.
Okay, so that would be a pretty big bump from 15.
I don't think it really would be. I mean, but hey, I haven't been in running shape like that in over 10 years.
But you're pretty light right now, so that definitely isn't going to hurt.
Yeah, and I got my nutrition dialed in pretty well, too, much better than I did in high school, so that will definitely help. You know, I'm a lot more fat adapted, a lot smarter, too, so I know how to train for it. Just the main thing is... where I used to live is there was hills and trails, a bunch of just wilderness and stuff like that. So there was nice stuff to look at. Here, I'm going to have to run around the neighborhood. I mean, that's boring as hell, running on the streets and stuff. It's kind of dangerous. I'm about to get hit by a car or something. So, yeah, I'm just not really sure what I want to do. I wish I knew at least one big hill around here so I could just sprint up and down that, you know, 10 times a day. That really get me in shape for it, but I don't know. We'll see how that goes. What's new with you?
This week, I guess a few things. One, I mean, you know, I'm always about, like, I can't help myself. I'm always tweaking my meals. I'm always tweaking my training, trying to get things as, like, optimum as possible. So, like, a month ago now, I introduced the white rice post-workout, and I did notice, at least definitely a noticeable increase in energy while training. Like, I felt better while training, and definitely that second half of my training sessions, I had a little more pep in my step, so I liked it. I didn't get fat. I didn't feel bad. I didn't feel any sort of signs of increased inflammation. You know, everything felt fine. So I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to keep this white rice into my routine. And it was about one cup post-workout. And as far as, like, total calories, it was still under, like, 5% of my total calories. So if you wanted to say I was still keto, I was still pretty close. And, but the thing with starch is it really is empty calories. All it is starch, especially from white rice. You're not getting any sort of vitamins, minerals, protein, nothing like that. So I stumbled onto, and it's all glucose. So once starch breaks down, it's all glucose. I stumbled on a little article talking about galactose metabolism versus glucose metabolism, and specifically the rates at which it turns into liver glycogen. So, and you get galactose from lactose when it breaks down, especially from like dairy, it breaks down to galactose and glucose. And I was like, okay, it kind of just piqued my interest. And this was one of those days where I got up at like 4 a.m. and it was just too damn early to work out, so I just was reading in bed. So I decided to introduce raw milk into my post-workout meal. I've been doing that now for maybe like 4 days, and I was a little nervous at first. I never had raw milk before, but I found this local like dairy farm. It's like an hour north, and they have it at the co-op. So I went there, picked up some, and I haven't had dairy in a very long time. And I went from pretty much no dairy to like all the dairy. You know what I mean? You don't get much more dairy than raw milk. You know what I mean?
So, is that Organic Pastures? Is that the name of it?
No, the name is, the name's like screwed up on it. It starts with a D. It sounds like a German, but Organic Pastures, I guess that comes into the story later. So yeah, I went and picked some up. I had some with a post-workout meal, no rice. So I replaced the rice with this and, felt fine. No problems, no digestion issues, no upset stomach, no nothing. So I was like, all right, cool. So I can handle milk good. And that's one of the things we do with our clients, as far as we usually eliminate dairy for at least a few weeks just to see, and then we'll reintroduce it to see if they have any sort of response. Because from a nutrition standpoint, dairy is really fine as far as protein and fat, things like that. It's all very healthy. But some people really don't handle dairy well. They just don't produce that enzyme lactase, which is needed to produce, to break down lactose. And I mean, you're one of those people.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, you have issues with certain cheeses and obviously milk, stuff like that. But, so yeah, so I'm introducing raw milk post-workout, and so far so good. I'm gonna do this for maybe 3-4 weeks, see if I notice any changes. And as far as from a nutrition standpoint, it's way more nutritious than white rice, you know, by a mile. I'm getting, you know, all the benefits of raw milk as far as it's not pasteurized, and not that I've went too far down that rabbit hole, but just a lot of my arguments always revolve around ancestral eating. So we've been drinking raw milk a lot longer than we've been drinking pasteurized milk. So I'm okay with this raw milk. And I did buy some, I think it's pronounced kefir today. Have you heard of that?
Kefir?
Kefir, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
So that's like fermented raw milk. And I'm pretty sure that brand is Organic Pastures, what you said, right?
Organic Pastures?
Yeah. Is that in Fresno?
I know it's somewhere in California, somewhat close by, and they're pretty big on all their organic, grass-fed dairy. That's the reason I brought it up with the raw milk is that's the only brand I know that makes raw milk. Yeah, I've been wanting to try raw milk. The only thing that's been holding me back is it's really hard to find, and when you can't find it, that shit's really expensive. What is it, like $15, $20 a gallon?
Yeah, it's Organic Pastures. That's the kefir I got. But, okay. You know, I'm not sure. They don't actually sell it by the gallon. They, it's almost like personal size bottles, you know? Maybe like the size of like a water bottle. So probably like 500 mils, something like that. Yeah, I'm excited to try. I haven't tried the kefir yet. I just wanted to see, because I think from a nutrition standpoint, they're pretty similar. There's going to be less lactose in the kefir because it's fermented. So that's what the bacteria is breaking down that lactose. If I like the taste of kefir more, then I'll go with kefir. If I like the taste of raw milk more, I'll go with raw milk. Either or, I think I'll be good. I'm just going to go with how it tastes. And I don't know. I'm excited. I like doing these little tweaks. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's always good to switch things up. And with kefir, you'll be getting some like probiotic benefits as well, some additional ones. Yeah, I mean, you do get those with raw milk. One thing that I've definitely noticed with my whole journey with dairy, raw cheese I do fine with. I haven't had any issues with any of the raw cheeses I've had. And like mostly the difference I've noticed when it comes to cheese is like the ultra pasteurized I can't do. if it's been aged like a year plus, that stuff seems to be better for me. But still, some of that stuff's hit or miss, and it doesn't matter if it's grass-fed or just, you know, commercial cheese. So I think there's something in that pasteurization process that's, I don't know, damaging something that my body's just not absorbing. I haven't taken that big of a deep dive other than just doing some experimentation on myself. So, yeah, I mean, that's definitely a rabbit hole I want to dive down into eventually. But I don't know. There's so many holes that I'm trying to dive into right now. I got to take them one at a time.
Yeah, yeah. No, I feel the exact same way. But now that I'm doing this, I definitely am more interested in this whole raw milk thing. Like, I did listen to a podcast about it. I did read a couple articles online about it just because that's just how I am. It's just, but I'm skeptical about damn near everything I read now because we can go, you know, we both know this. We can go online right now and search cholesterol and we can find 10 articles that say cholesterol causes heart disease.
Easy. Oh, yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be hard. And then if you scroll down a little bit further, you're going to find another 10 that say it's completely harmless and it's beneficial. Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to know what to trust when you start reading up on stuff that you don't really know. The best thing is just read 10 sources, see which makes the most sense to you after, you know, you've heard multiple sides of each story and then kind of go from there. It's pretty much all you really can do.
Yeah, so you'd have to, you know, get knowledge about it because obviously we know a little bit more about nutrition. We know how essential cholesterol is. So the arguments revolving around cholesterol being bad, I know that's not true. So I know not to really believe those articles. But as far as pasteurization, it turns out, I guess cows, they can carry forms of TB that actually can be transferred to humans, like through the milk. So about 100 years ago, maybe like 120 years ago, people were dying from TB and these other bacterial diseases that they would get in the milk. And I guess just the process of milking cows wasn't very hygienic. So people were getting sick. So it almost was like a safeguard to these things to heat up the milk and kill a lot of these bacteria. But the only thing is that that heating also, because we understand this from cooking, like eggs or beef, whatever, cooking will denature certain proteins and also enzymes and fatty acids. It just changes it. That's what cooking does. So you're definitely changing the nutrition profile of milk by cooking it. I mean, there's really no doubt about that. The only thing you can argue is how much. Is it 1%? Is it 20%? That's where I think we would have to really look into it. The thing that stuck out to me the most that kind of made me really, I guess, go towards raw milk a little bit more was that pasteurization increases, like it pretty much doubles the shelf life of milk. So from a business standpoint, wouldn't you promote a narrative that allows you to sell more milk, make more money, and ship it farther and not have to keep, you know what I mean, restocking every 2 weeks? You can do it every 4 weeks.
Yeah, every other food has done that, so why wouldn't milk go down the same route?
Exactly. So it made me, I was like, okay, so when I see a certain angle that saves people money or makes a company more money, I'm like, okay, so I'm just gonna go with the other side because money is ruining a lot of things.
Oh yeah, definitely. And if we needed to pasteurize milk, we wouldn't have been consuming it long enough to figure that out. We would have stopped consuming milk a few hundred years ago, 1,000 years ago, somewhere along those lines, because, oh, hey, our bodies can't handle it, so obviously we don't need to pasteurize it.
Exactly. And And I guess the lactose enzyme, I mean, all humans have it as children, because obviously lactose is in breast milk, but the adult onset, like lactose enzyme that people have nowadays, like obviously I have it, no problem. But apparently that gene evolved really quick. And there's a theory out there that it evolved faster than most genes because milk is so nutritious. And then back in the day, people needed all the nutrients they could, that having lactose was enzyme lactase was a really beneficial gene. So it almost evolved like hyper fast. And again, that does make sense to me. If you have that enzyme, you're good, you know?
Yeah, we're on the top of the food chain. It makes sense that we would definitely develop some evolutionary benefits to being able to consume one of the most nutritious foods out there. I don't know if it's the most nutritious, but it's definitely one of them.
And again, like I said earlier, it's definitely a lot more nutritious than rice.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've been doing that, feeling good, workouts are going good. Yeah, and I guess actually talking about workouts, that leads into the topic of today's discussion. We wanted to talk about weight training.
Yeah, it was a perfect little transition. So, yeah, we want to talk about strength training specifically, whether you want to use weights or not. That's kind of like up to the individual and what you want to do. So strength training is basically any type of training where you're trying to improve your strength. So just a quick little definition. So strength is going to be the amount of force a muscle can exert, which is different than power, which power is the force times the speed at which you do it at. So somebody like Bruce Lee, small guy, yes, he's strong for his size, but he's not strong compared to somebody like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold is like twice his size, so obviously he's going to be a lot stronger. But when it comes to power, you can see all those videos of Bruce Lee's like one-inch punch or videos of him kicking a pad and this guy just flying through the air. Yes, he might not have the most strength in the world, but with all the speed that he has, he's able to exert a lot of force through that time. So he is a very, very powerful man, or he was a very powerful man. So that's where the difference is. Strength is just, hey, can you pick up this car? Damn, you're hella strong. Can you, but like power would be something like, can you throw this baseball 100 miles an hour? That's the quick little difference. So everybody should be working towards developing some sort of strength training. Everybody wants to be stronger. Even if you don't think you want to be, you do. Trust me. Everybody should be.
There's no detriment to it. There's not like a harm in carrying a little more muscle.
Oh, not at all. The major benefit is going to be injury prevention. And then all the other benefits that are associated with strength are all tied to injury prevention. That is the key takeaway. If you don't want to get hurt, be strong.
And I know just from a metabolic standpoint, having a little extra muscle on your frame allows you to get away with a little bit kind of being lax on your diet, because muscle kind of acts like a glucose sink. So on a day where you have a slice of cheesecake or, you know, a slice of pizza, if you're just a sedentary person, maybe you're heavy set, you don't carry a lot of muscle on your frame, a lot of that glucose isn't going to have anywhere to go, so it'll just go to your adipose tissue and become fat. But if you're someone like me or like you who carries a little bit of muscle on their frame, like I've said before in previous podcasts, if I did eat bad one night, I just wake up and I look fuller because that glucose has somewhere to go, which is completely metabolically healthy to be transferred into my muscles and turned into glycogen.
Oh, yeah, that's a very, very good point. Another thing that goes with, all right, so muscle size is directly correlated with muscle strength. So the bigger a muscle, the stronger that muscle is. And then also, just like what you just said, the bigger the muscle, the more glycogen it can store. So yes, you can eat a lot more sugar, be a little bit more relaxed on your diet, and still not have to worry about having high blood sugar, having elevated insulin, because that insulin can still do its job because all your muscle stores aren't full all the time.
And that's a big deal. People don't realize how big that is. That allows you to get away with a lot, having a little bit of muscle on your frame. And we're not talking, you know, 300-pound bodybuilder. I'm talking a little grandma. If she put on 5 pounds of muscle over the course of, you know, a few years, from a metabolic standpoint, she would be 10 times more healthy.
Oh, that's very, very true. So also going along with that, when you're training your muscles, especially if you're doing it with some sort of resistance, whether it's your own body weight or you're lifting some heavy weights, your muscles get strong, your bones are going to get strong. So increasing that bone density. Perfect conversation. We were just talking about milk earlier. Another thing that's great for bone density. So the older population, something that you really should be considering is actually before you get old, because the older you are, the harder it is to put muscle on. Your body is dealing with a lot of other battles at the same time. So you're going to lose strength over time. It happens. You can just watch any professional sports league. You see those guys start falling off when they're 40. Some of them start falling off when they're 35. It's because they start losing strength over time. And the best way to do it is just have a good strength training program.
So in your opinion, what would like a good strength training program look like?
It all depends on who you are and what you like to do.
Because me and you have completely different routines for the most part.
Oh, that's, yeah, completely true. And we also have a lot of different goals in mind, too.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much anything. I would avoid weightless stuff. So don't try and go swimming. Yes, you're going to get a little bit stronger in a pool, but you're not doing anything to increase your bone density. So that isn't the way I would do it. Either body weight stuff or lift heavy weights. Or there's other ways around it. If you don't have heavy weights, you can do something like a negative or a drop set, something along those lines. To let's break those down. So do you want to explain what a drop set is?
Okay, so a drop set is something, normally when you work out, like a classic kind of bodybuilding technique would be to pyramid up. So you would start with a weight that you could do about 12 reps with, and then the next set you would increase the weight and do about 10 reps. Your next set you would increase the weight so you can do about 6 reps. And then on that heavy set, once you're done with those 6 reps, you drop the weight back down. Again, that's why it's called a drop set, back down to that light weight that you first started at. And then you do as many reps as you possibly can while you're already in that fatigue state after doing that heavy set. So it's a real easy way to increase intensity and to really tax your muscles to the max. And that should be the goal while you're working out. It shouldn't be to kind of talk, hang out, look on your Instagram on your phone. You want to get there and you want to tax your muscles and you want to get that signal to your muscles that, oh shit, I'm not prepared for this. Oh shit, I need to get bigger. I need to get stronger. So when you get home and you get that meal in, your body gets that signal and it grows. So doing a drop set is a good way to get that signal.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you want to fatigue all your motor units as well. So just a quick explanation of what a motor unit is. So a motor unit is your muscle fibers, like all the muscle fibers that are together. Each muscle itself is going to have multiple motor units. And the way they're recruited is the weakest is always going to be recruited. And the strongest is only going to be recruited when it needs to be. So if you're lifting up a key, for example, only your like weakest motor units are going to be used. Maybe, you know, your weakest 2 or 3 motor units are going to be tied to that movement. But if you're lifting up something like a couch, you're going to be using all your motor units for that muscle because the couch is heavy. But there's a downside. So your weak motor units have the most endurance because you're using them all the time. Of course, when you use your strongest motor units, you're also using your weaker motor units as well. But since you're only using them when you're extremely tired or when you like need to lift something very heavy, they don't have very good endurance. So in order to really train all your muscle to extreme fatigue, you have to do a drop set. So yes, when you do that like 1 or 2 bench max, you're fatiguing your strongest motor unit, but that's about it. So when you're doing a drop set, you go from like 300 pounds down to 250. So when you're at 300 pounds, you're doing that one time, your strongest motor units are going to fatigue off of that, but the rest of your motor units aren't because they have more endurance. So when you strip that down, you go to 250, and now you're recruiting a bunch of other motor units that, yes, they're a little bit fatigued, but they got more juice than them. Only your strongest ones are fatigued. So that's why you can go down to 250, and then you can drop it down again to 200, 150, however you want to do it. And a lot of people have experienced this when you're lifting something really heavy, you start shaking. What that shaking sensation is those motor units that are all firing at the same time, hey, those strongest ones, they're starting to get tired. So they're not able to stay contracted. That's why you start shaking, because those strong motor units are starting to fatigue. So that's why a drop set's very, very important. You're fatiguing that all your motor units instead of just your strongest ones.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that should be the goal of whatever training program you're in, whether it's honestly hypertrophy or like a strength program, you still want to just tax yourself in the gym.
Yeah, or what's the point?
I mean, I was actually thinking about this today. I think I really obviously love to work out. Like, I think I could use a coach just to rein me in. Because sometimes I'll physically be done as far as training goes, like as my muscles are pretty much as pumped as they're going to be, as fatigued as they should be. But I'll just keep training. I'll do another exercise. I'll pose in the mirror. I'll do something because I like training. You know what I mean? And I'm not getting anything from that. If anything, it's just hurting me. I'm overtraining. I definitely understand when people overtrain.
Well, I think the main thing with overtraining is you're not giving yourself enough time to recover. So if you're doing chest on a Monday and you did like those, you know, heavy drop sets like we just discussed, and then Wednesday you're back in the gym doing the same thing again, like, oh yeah, you're going to overtrain. You just completely destroyed your muscles. You need to give them, depending on how hard the workout is, you need to give them 4 or 5 days, maybe a week off before you like tax them like that again. That's why football players, plus all the, you know, the beating that they take, that's why they're play one game a week. You know, they need all that time to recover.
Some people don't realize that. I know I've had a couple clients talk to me about, again, it's just the narrative about you need to work out to lose weight. So say they work out on a Monday, they're not a trained athlete, so they're extremely sore Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And they talk to me on Friday saying they want to work out. And I'll ask them, you know, well, how are you feeling? Are you sore? And they'll still say they're sore, but they want to work out. And I'm like, no, if you're still sore, you need to rest. There's no point breaking down a muscle that's already broken.
Oh, yeah. I can agree with you more. I mean, on those days, if you do feel lazy, that's when you should incorporate some sort of active recovery. I do yoga. I do, like, beginner yoga, even though I can handle a lot more advanced stuff now. Just because I just want my body to be moving, get my muscles contracting, you know, get that fluid moving throughout my body without, you know, having to lift 300 pounds or, you know, something along those lines. Just like some nice little recovery type stuff. Foam rolling is great for this. A hot tub, either an ice bath or a hot bath. I mean, just these type of things. So if you do got that free time and you're bored and you want something to do, I like the term active recovery. That way you still think you're doing something productive instead of just sitting on your ass in a hot tub. Yeah. I mean, a lot of this stuff is just like, hey, you don't have to work the hardest. You can just work smarter than other people and still get a lot of the same benefits. All right. So you know a lot more about this than I do, seeing as you are, or you just were, a damn near 100% carnivore. So what is like the number one food that somebody should be eating if they're trying to put on muscle?
Yeah, meat, for sure. Preferably red meat if you can take it.
Where would you put eggs? Would you put that as like eggs and steak? Would you put those as 1A and 1B? Or do you see one superior to the other?
Man, that's like asking you to pick your favorite kid.
So it's like a 1A, 1B type
yeah,
of thing?
I would say 1A, 1B for sure. And you can pick A or B depending on your preference. Yeah.
Okay. But they're top of the list.
Yes, for sure, top of the list. As far as when you're training, the predominant like macronutrient that our muscles is made of is protein. So you want to get a nice quality, complete protein from your diet while exercising, and getting that from eggs and getting that from red meat, or even just like sheep, goat, salmon, those type of sources is prime time. You can't beat it.
Could not agree with you more. I mean, meat is the only way you're going to be able to get all your amino acids. So it's the only way you're going to get a complete protein, getting all those essential amino acids. So this is exactly what you want to do, is eat meat. Another thing you might want to throw in as well, depending on what your goals, like what Tyson was talking about earlier, how he adds rice and now he switched over to milk, is you might want to add some sort of carbohydrate source just to give your body a little bit higher of an insulin spike. So your muscles will grow a little bit more. But if you're trying to lose weight, you don't want that. You don't want to be, you don't want that insulin spike. Because once insulin's elevated, you're not using fat metabolism anymore. You're just using glycolysis. So depends on what your goals are. If you want to do a carb up meal, if you are going to add carbs, you do it right after your workout, post-workout.
Yeah, it's exactly what I did. It's exactly what I incorporated as a post-workout carb meal. And there definitely are benefits to it, but like you said, let's say you're a female, you are 100 pounds overweight and you just want to lose 50 pounds, you know, you're not really care. You're not trying to hop on a stage and be some, you know, bikini model. You really have no use for white rice. But this stage of your life, we'll get you on some sort of low carb keto style diet. And again, you'll still be getting the complete amino acid profile from the meats, but you won't need the carbohydrates. But if you're someone like me,
who you train all the time. Honestly, I think I train too much. I just can't help myself. But I can handle, honestly, I can probably handle triple the amount of carbs I have. But I'm trying to consume the minimum amount of carbs and get the most out of those carbs. So that's my routine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's smart. That's the way to do it. So if you are in some sort of competition, if you're going for, you know, even like a weight training competition, or if you're like some sort of athlete, I would recommend adding carbs post-workout. It's the only time you really need carbohydrates is post-workout, just to replenish those glycogen stores. I know we've been talking about this a lot lately, especially with Tyson doing these carb-up meals, but that's why he's doing them. He's using all his glycogen in his muscles while he's working out.
Insulin spike definitely helps, because insulin, all it really does is it transports nutrients, you know, from your blood into your cells. So the increased insulin kind of helps push more glucose into your cells, more amino acids into your cells. So if you're on a training split and you're trying to be, again, if you're wrestling, playing football, playing basketball, something where you know you're going to be extremely active a lot of the time, then that insulin really isn't your enemy. You can use it as a tool. So it's definitely part of the program. There's definitely a lot of weapons in the arsenal, and there's times and stages of programs that you use them. And it's important to know all those stages and use them wisely.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot of bad foods out there. There's just bad uses. You just need to know how to use them, right or wrong. So, like, yeah, there's a lot of tools out there, but if you know how to use a tool in the right spot, it's great. But if you're trying to hammer in a screw, it's not really the best tool for the job. So you just got to you need to know what's up. So are we ready for the tip of the week?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. I got a good one just going along with this whole training, strength training type of thing, is when you are working out, find your, I don't know if I want to call it a spirit animal, but maybe spirit athletes, somebody like that. So when I'm working out, I'm not me. I am Rocky Balboa. That's who I turn into. As soon as I hear that Rocky theme song or the Eye of the Tiger, I hear that music playing, I imagine I am Rocky. And when I am working out, I am fighting for my life. Who's your spirit animal?
Oh, shit. Well, I definitely don't think like that.
Oh, come on. This is an easy one.
Is it? Is it me, Mike Tyson?
Damn, I thought that was the easiest one that I ever gave you. That was such an all of you. You just watch the ball just go right on by.
No, I mean, I definitely think... working out, there's definitely, I mean, honestly, in my opinion, there's something primal about picking up a heavy weight from the ground. It allows you to get off a lot of your aggression and allows you to just let loose and not worry about other things. And like you said, being Rocky Balboa and just kind of fighting for your life. I think there's something human about that that has been taken away from us in this day-to-day 9-to-5 lifestyle. We're not allowed to be that aggressive. We're not allowed to let out those emotions. So again, working out, just in that sense, from a mental health standpoint, is extremely healthy.
You don't want to talk about your spirit animal?
Is it Mike Tyson? Was that the right answer?
Yeah, that's what I was going for. You okay. How many Mike Tyson shirts and
black Oh, yeah, and I listen to Mike Tyson like speeches when I work out. Yeah. Actually, that's a good point. When I train, I listen to this Mike Tyson speech. It was before we fought Lennox Lewis, where he talked about, like, I want your heart, I want to eat your children. Like, he's real aggressive. So I have it on, like, a Spotify song that I listen to. So I probably listen to Mike Tyson more than anybody else on the planet.
If you want maybe a better example than what we just gave you, one of the best basketball players of all time, possibly the best basketball player of all time, his name is Irvin Johnson. But when he's on the basketball court, he is magic. Those are two completely different dudes, Irvin and Magic. The people that his family knew, that was Irvin. The person that we saw on the basketball court just dominating, regardless if he was a point guard or a center, that was Magic. Those were two completely different people. One was completely fun-loving, loved everybody, best friend. Magic, on the other hand, would cut your throat if it meant he could win the game. Two completely different people. Yeah, so, just try and find your spirit animal. I mean, if you want to be, I guess, like, today's example would be The Rock. maybe you need a little bit more swagger, so you turn into Conor McGregor and just start shit-talking people while you're at the gym, something along those lines. But yeah, just go out there. If you're having a hard time finding motivation, pretend you're somebody else that never lacks that motivation.
Yeah, I really like that. Those are two good examples. So that's another podcast in the books. Again, you can get us at, or reach us at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. If you have any questions or concerns, you can email us at tntwellnessandnutrition@gmail.com. We're on all the social medias, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We have a YouTube page as well. So check us out.
Yeah, and we're still trying to get some more questions. We want to do a Q&A episode. We want to throw those in pretty much maybe on rotation when we don't have a topic or we finally get enough of them. So please hit us up on any of those social medias or our website. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week. Take care.